Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
And I'm excited to be a part of the conversation, specifically this morning or afternoon or evening, depending on when you're listening. We're talking about homelessness, and we're talking about a crisis that has been impacting our community for years, but has reached a level that I think has got a lot more people involved in the conversation. And I think that that is a really critical component and ingredient to us actually overcoming this challenge here locally for the betterment of those individuals who we have living on the streets in our community.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's November 5th, 2021 program, Seeking Solutions, the State of Our Homelessness Crisis. And I'm Kitty Piercy, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. In today's program, we welcome speakers, City Councilor Randy Groves of Eugene's Ward 8, Brittany Quick Warner, President and CEO of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce, and Heather Saliki, co-lead of Everyone Village. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would also like to thank Karen Knudsen for coordinating today's program. In August 2021, the number of homeless people in Lane County was counted at 3,115, but in that month, only 42 people were moved into housing. The local shelters could provide an additional 851 beds, but that means that 2,222 people had nowhere to go. A circumstance in which 70% of a crisis goes unaddressed is ripe for expanded engagement and rethinking. In the past 6 months, the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce interviewed more than 150 stakeholders in the community. They included executives from nearly every nonprofit delivering homeless services, city and county staff, business and community leaders, unhoused individuals, and residents. They spoke with experts from across the country in communities where significant progress has been made toward ending homelessness. The resulting report, called The State of Our Homelessness Crisis, includes 8 primary recommendations and a timeline for action. In this program, Eugene Chamber CEO Brittany Warner and West Eugene Ward 8 City Councilor Randy Groves and community advocate Heather Zalicki will share what they have learned in years of work to quantify our local needs, understand difficult challenges, and identify real solutions that can be successfully operationalized and implemented. Across the United States, a few solution-oriented communities have been successful at eliminating homelessness, reaching what is described as functional zero. Are the recommendations in this report and the robust engagement of our business community how Eugene gets there?
Hello and welcome to the City Club of Eugene. I'm City Club President-elect Karen Knudsen, the coordinator of today's program, Seeking Solutions, the State of Our Homelessness Crisis. Collectively, our three speakers today hold decades of experience working to address community emergencies, build broad support for effective action, and to implement meaningful solutions. And the ability to do those three things together has never been more critical to combine in addressing our homelessness crisis. So with that, I'll hand it off to our first speaker today, Brittany Quick Warner from the Eugene Chamber of Commerce.
Thanks, Karen. Hi, everyone. My name is Brittany Quick Warner. Like Karen said, I'm the president and CEO at the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce, and I'm absolutely honored to be here. And I'm excited to be a part of the conversation, specifically this morning or afternoon or evening, depending on when you're listening. We're talking about homelessness, and we're talking about a crisis that has been impacting our community for years, but has reached a level that I think has got a lot more people involved in the conversation. And I think that that is a really critical component and ingredient to us actually overcoming this challenge here locally for the betterment of those individuals who we have living on the streets in our community. I do want to start, you know, my presentation just talking about where we're at as a community with this issue. And to do that, I think it's important to ground us in some data. I will go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the data we collected. But first, to tell the story of how I got to be the person on this panel talking about homelessness as the Chamber CEO, we need to talk a little bit about the state of business in this community. And that is really where our chamber has been focused. Is over the last couple of years, obviously with the pandemic, there has been an enormous amount of need from our business community to really do what they can do to help us continue to thrive as a community, right? We support our local businesses because we think it's a mean to an end. And that end is that we have a thriving local community where people can live happy, healthy lives. And we believe a core component of that for those who are able is to have a good paying job that can support their lifestyle, and having a living wage job that can support their lifestyle. Like I said, if they're able to engage in work, we want to make sure that we can find a job for them, and that our employers are supporting the employees that they have. We have been working a lot on COVID relief, on, you know, businesses have been living in this regulatory world where things are changing really quickly. They new rules that they have to abide by, health and safety rules, obviously for the betterment of the community. And there's a lot as a business owner that folks have been navigating. On top of the navigation that they've been doing around COVID and, you know, the health concerns and considerations that they have to take, we have a lot of businesses in our community who have been experiencing a really significant increase in both crime and their ability to operate their businesses with individuals who are interacting with their companies that are doing so in a way where they cannot be productive or move their business forward. And we realized through the pandemic, while the numbers of individuals who we've counted as homeless in our community may not have increased per se, the visibility and the existence of individuals in our public spaces has increased, and it's because of the inability for folks to shelter in some of the shelters that we do have. And it's because we are, as a community, we have a reality that folks are losing their housing for a lot of different reasons. And this is a crisis that has grown beyond just the realm of our local government or nonprofits and their ability to handle this crisis and to serve the number of individuals who we need to serve as a community. And it is impacting the broader community, our businesses, our neighbors, and of course, the folks on the street. So our chamber in this last year really started getting this like huge outreach of businesses saying to us, we are struggling. We don't know how to handle the crime that we're seeing. We want to help and we don't know how. We see these individuals on the streets and we don't believe that that's the best situation for anyone to be in. And we want to do more and we just don't know what to do. And so our chamber leadership, our board of directors really kind of came together at the beginning of this year and said, this is the number one thing that we're hearing from our businesses as a concern that they have for our community. And so we have to figure out how to engage, how to productively move the conversation forward about the homeless crisis we have in our community. So, you know, I kind of looked at this and said, I got a couple ways I can go. One is to just get really loud and angry. As a business community, we can pull folks together and sort of, you know, go marching down to his city hall to say, you need to do something about this. But if I was totally honest with myself, if I looked back 5 years down the road, I don't think that would have changed anything. And so I think the other option for us was to dig deep and to really try to understand what are some of the systematic issues that we have in our community and or across the country that are causing this crisis of homelessness, and where are the areas that the private sector can come to the table and help to contribute to solutions. And that's the direction that our board wanted to go. We didn't want to just sort of bang the drum to say this is a problem. We wanted to figure out how we can actually help contribute with solutions. We weren't expecting to find a silver bullet. Folks like Heather have been working in this space for years, and there is not an easy answer. It's why we're still in the situation that we're in. However, I really do believe that having more community members around the table to have the discussion about how we can solve this crisis together, I do think that that's one magic ingredient that we haven't had to this point as a community that will help us move forward. So how did we get to this point? We spent the last 6 to 7 months doing really, really broad scale outreach to folks who have worked in this space, to people who are doing this work every day, to really try to understand what's working, what's not working, what are the challenges that you bump up against every single day, what are the systematic areas where we are failing as a community. And we had over 175 interviews with individuals in our community and a handful of those outside of the community to really understand as best as we could. And what I can tell you is, having done those 175 interviews almost entirely myself, I still feel like I'm only scratching the surface of this crisis and this issue. And so this is the beginning of a process of us really engaging and figuring out how the business community can support the broader issue of homelessness and the individuals who are on our streets. But we learned a lot. And what we wanted to do was to put back out into the community what we did learn. So we developed this report that we did our best to summarize about 250 pages of notes down to about 15 pages. So of course there's things that are missing and this doesn't capture the full complexity of the issue. But the idea was that this could really try to help bring our community to a place where we understood a little bit better where we are currently at, so we could have more productive conversations. So we dove into the data, and this is what we saw. We saw that our community in the month of August, just before we published this report, we had 3,115 individuals who are in our county's homeless by name list, identified as homeless individuals. 42 individuals moved into housing in August. So you can see the gap between the number of people we have living on our streets and within some of our shelters and the number of folks who were able to get into permanent supportive housing. Our inventory as a community of shelter, and this incorporates several different types of shelter, anywhere from the Mission, which we know is a brick and mortar building that folks can shelter in, to a Conestoga hut. We have about 851 shelter beds in our community prior in August, right? So this was prior to some of the safe sleep sites opening, which again, we have different definitions of what exactly shelter looks like. But what I can say is that 3,115 and 851 is an obvious gap. We have a huge gap in the number of sheltering opportunities that we have for individuals who are living on the streets, and we have to figure out how to address this issue. Getting folks into permanent supportive housing is important, but making sure that they can find a safe, warm, dry place to sleep is also the critical thing that we have sitting in front of us. So we talked to business leaders, we talked to service providers, we talked to city and county staff, we talked to unhoused individuals. We learned from folks in other neighborhoods and from neighborhood leaders and folks in other communities. And we learned that there's a long history of issues that have gotten us to where we're at, that we are not the only community facing this challenge, and that we've done a lot of really good things as a community to help us move forward in this issue. However, there were some really obvious areas for us that we felt like as a community, we needed to start to focus on. And so we tried to do our best to categorize some of these recommendations into 8 areas. The first is data. I think that any sort of big, hairy problem that you're trying to solve is only going to get so far to a solution without really understanding the data behind it. We have a homeless by name list that our county puts together with the help of service providers who do this work with homeless individuals. And there's still a lot of shortcomings with that. And so that's an area that we have to really figure out. How do we have as accurate as possible data to really understand the breadth and the depth of this issue? The second is, we found that there was a pretty clear lacking in a shared goal for what we were even trying to accomplish and the ability to articulate that. We have, like I said, relied on our local government and our nonprofits to solve this problem for our community. And it's bigger than what they can handle on their own. This issue is one that the entire community, we believe, needs to have a say in and needs to be able to engage around so we can actually find some tangible ways to move forward. The third was our service provider capacity. We are reliant on some incredible service providers in this community, and they are struggling to maintain the level of work that they're currently doing, let alone take on more. They are facing workforce challenges like many of our businesses, our for-profit businesses are. They're facing really intense working environments for these staff that are, you know, asked to do the work that they do on really undervalued salaries, in my opinion. So there is some serious issue around the way that we're addressing this and how we're providing resources to our service providers to get that work done. The fourth is emergency shelter and permanent housing. So we as a community and as a country have really, you know, leaned into this idea of housing first. And I think this is a really good strategy. However, housing first, if we're only putting our resources into permanent supportive housing, ignoring the sheltering issue that we have on the streets, we're never going to be able to move forward. So we as a community, I think, need a clearer strategy for how we are going to both address the emergency shelter needs and the permanent supportive housing needs. And that needs to be known throughout the entire community. People need to feel like they have an understanding of what we're trying to do with this issue locally. The fifth thing was outreach and case management. This was one that was identified in the Technical Assistance Commission, who did the work for our community a couple of years ago, that getting better organization around our outreach and case management to try and to become more efficient in the way that we do this work, but also better communicate between our different organizations so we can find the right resources for the individuals that we are trying to serve. Not every organization is going to specialize in every type of resource that's out there, but amongst our service providers, if we can coordinate better, we can get people through the door that makes the most sense for them. The sixth is the wraparound services. While we, you know, can put time and energy into housing or into shelter, until we can really figure out how do we wrap the services around those individuals who are in those situations to really try to help them get well, we're never going to get them out of a situation where they're not just re-entering homelessness down the road. So as a community, we have to take seriously our mental health services, our addiction services, our workforce development services. We have to invest more in that type of activity, or we're never going to get ourselves out of this cycle. The seventh is enforcement and accountability. You know, this is one that I think will be responded to. You know, there's some controversy out there around this. However, I really believe, after talking to a lot of individuals, including unhoused individuals themselves, there is a significant amount of crime happening within our homeless populations, and our homeless individuals are often the victims of that crime. And we owe it to the people in our community to protect them and to create a safe environment. And so this is not us suggesting in any way, shape, or form that homelessness should be criminalized at all. We do not believe that's the case. The data and the research does not show that that's a successful way to get people out of homelessness. However, there is real crime happening in this community that we have got to put our foot down and hold each other accountable to the laws that we have around vandalism, around breaking and entering, around burglary. There's some serious, you know, assault crimes happening. And like I said, a lot of times our homeless individuals are victims of those crimes, and they need to feel like they can be protected as well. The last is to rebuild community trust. The biggest thing we heard is this lack of community trust around this issue and a sense of hopelessness. And we really feel like addressing these issues as an entire community and putting a path forward to help people understand, we know this is a crisis and we're going to move it forward together. That'll go a long way. And providing some accountability to say, here's what we said we're going to do, and this is what we're doing. So people can understand that and feel like we have a plan, right? That there's a sense of hopelessness because they don't feel like we have a plan for how we're going to tackle this issue together. So the Chamber has come out with four things that we're willing to step up and do to help move this conversation forward. It's four of many things that we're coming to the table saying we want to be a part of the solution. First is we're convening a business leaders task force with the specific task of deciding and figuring out how the private sector can contribute more effectively to this conversation. The second is to build out implementation tactics for these eight different recommendations. We don't want to just put a plan out there with no path for how you actually get there. The third is to convene that larger community conversation that I just talked about, bringing in folks from multiple sectors, sitting at the table as equals to say, how is our community going to get a handle on this crisis together? And the fourth is looking at performing a cost study or an economic impact analysis to better understand, like I said, some of the data around how this is costing our community and how we might need to be shifting resources away from one thing in order to actually address the actual cost that this has for our community as well. Ultimately, what we know and understand is that the real cost is human lives, and there are individuals living on the street in our community who deserve better. And we have to, as a community, understand that we can't just move people. We can't sweep people from one place to another. We can't just expect to sort of hide the issue. These are real people and real lives, and they have needs that are incredibly diverse. And as a community, we have to step up and figure out how to meet those needs. So with that work, we've been working closely with Randy Groves, city councilor from Ward 8, and he's been an incredible advocate for not only the business community, but for homeless individuals and service providers in this community around this issue. And I'm excited to have you all learn a little bit more about the work Randy's been doing.
Thank you, Brittany. And thank you, City Club, for inviting us to come join you for this important topic. I also want to echo something that Brittany said. I have tremendous respect for Brittany and Heather in this work, and I feel like we've forged a really good relationship, and we are working hard on this issue from three different directions. For those of you who don't know me, my background before I became a city councilor, which I took office on January 6th of this year. Before that, I was our city and our area's fire chief, and I worked almost 37 years in the fire service industry with most of that time here in Eugene. And during that time, I've received thousands of calls into our unhoused population. So I've seen it from that unique lens. Brittany covered a lot of, I think, the real salient issues. So I'm going to try and streamline what I have to say here and just kind of get to the meat of what I found, city actions, and where we go from here. When I took office in January, I found a system that was completely overwhelmed with the size and scope of the problem. We had areas of duplication. We had areas that were being missed. Everybody was trying to solve the problem, but we seem to be lacking a centralized, coordinated process. You know, just to give you an idea of the scope and magnitude, Brittany gave some great statistics, but I want to take this to more of a national look. There's been a migration and a disproportionate impact on the West Coast, with Oregon being number 7 in the country for the number of unhoused individuals, Washington State being number 5, and California being number 1. And Eugene specifically is number 1 per capita for rates of unhoused people for U.S. cities of 100,000 or more population. So that's something to keep in mind. As we've tried to tackle this problem, and since taking office, I've met with our business communities, our workers, people in government, different units of government, and I've met with many of our unhoused residents as well, trying to understand where the levers of change are and defining the problem. And what I found were there was a lot of things out there that are impacting effectiveness. Part of it, Brittany addressed with, not only are there good people, people that need help that are in unfortunate situations, there's also people that are incapable of taking care of themselves, whether it be from mental health issues or significant substance misuse disorders. There's also a pretty strong criminal element that hides in plain sight inside the unhoused population, but also from the housed community. We have drug dealers trying to get into 310 Garfield right now to try and profit from the misfortune of some of these people. So it's important when we look at this that we think about how do we protect our community at all levels. And we've got some situations that have, in some cases, made it more difficult. For example, there was a federal court decision down in Los Angeles that was fortunately it was overturned. But just to kind of give an indicator of some of the disconnect, I think, between our judiciary and what we're seeing at the street level, is a federal court judge ordered the city of Los Angeles and Los Angeles County to house every unhoused person, which is about 65,000 people down there, by fall. That could literally bankrupt the city. And, you know, while I applaud trying to take care of people, at the same time, this is a national problem. This is a state problem. This is a regional problem. And it's too big, even with our forces of business community come together, our nonprofits, which are very talented and produce a great product, and our local governments. It still takes more than what we have. And the migration is continuing to come west. So we need something on a bigger scale and more help. I talked a little bit about the lack of centralized coordination. Well, in late April, City Manager Sarah Maderi, from the city standpoint, formed an overhead team. So we have, and it was operating under the incident command system, something I'm very familiar with from the fire service, and it works. And since that time, I feel that our efforts have been much more coordinated. We stopped the duplication. And we also helped plug some of the holes that we were missing. But it still at times feels to me like we're trying to bail out the Titanic with a teacup. We need bigger, bolder actions. We need to move with more speed, in my opinion. We sometimes hold out for great and good sales right over our head. And right now we need to be making steady progress forward if we're going to make a difference. The other thing I wanted to say is that as we look at this problem, we've been mostly, up till now, swatting at the symptoms. And that's because the symptoms are creating the biggest challenges. We have people living in spaces that were never engineered nor intended for that purpose, on our streets, in our parks, in our public spaces. And not only is it critical that we move people into a better situation with these managed camps to start with, it helps them, and it also returns our public spaces for which they were intended. What I found in West Eugene, which has a disproportionate number of our RVs and trailers that are people are living in on the streets, there's no place for sanitation. You have open human waste in the streets, in the plantings of houses and businesses, and it's created a problem. And when we talk about businesses, I think it's really important to understand that that's what drives our local economy. That's where people work. That's how people forge a living. And it's part of the solution as we try to help people transition from being unhoused into being capable of supporting themselves and being able to sustain a level of life that hopefully is more healthy and better for them as well. There's a number of things that we have done along the way. There's been change in our parking ordinance, trying to help some of our parts of our community. One of the things I saw, we actually had businesses that couldn't get their shipping in and out, and workers sat idle and in some cases had to be sent home. And so all of a sudden we start endangering other people of becoming unhoused. So this thing needs to be looked at from all angles, from the perspective of the unhoused, from the perspective of our local economy, from the perspective of our neighborhoods, and from the perspective of our workers. So where do we go from here? One of the things I also noticed is that we need better coordination between our units of local government. You know, everybody's kind of working, but it just seems like there's some misfiring and some dysfunction that I'm hoping that we can build better as we move forward. We need to develop better mechanisms for also addressing the underlying issues of being unhoused. As I mentioned, up to now, we've been swatting at the symptoms. We need to catch up and then get ahead of that by looking at how do we stop people from becoming unhoused in the first place. You know, for example, people that are in a housed situation that are in danger of losing their housing. We're much better off for the people's health and welfare, as well as the economic impacts of keeping people in the housing they already have before they become, you know, displaced and we have to help them get into new housing. So that's another thing that we need to work on. I already talked about organized solicitation for help from state and federal government. That's a need. And we need to also change our national reputation for being a community with no rules. And that gets to the accountability piece that Brittany was talking about. One of the things I learned, and I saw it clear back in the early 80s even, responding to calls. When you're working with people in this position, especially those that have substance misuse problems, they frequently, when you say, what brought you here? You know, a common question we would ask is, hey, where are you from and what brought you here? And part of that is, as we assess a patient medically, you need to get them talking so you understand their level of mentation. And that's part of how we evaluate a patient before we transport them to the hospital. And most of the time, they would be from somewhere else. And one of the most common responses for what brought you here, it was free stuff and no rules. And so there's a perception of that out there. And so that's something I think is important to think about as well. While I'm all for us being compassionate as a community and giving people an opportunity to better themselves and helping them do so, we also need to be a community that has rules that we all follow. That's what makes us a civilized society. And then that will help us in turn more effectively address the inappropriate behavior and the criminal activity. And in this last couple of weeks, we've had some actual violent encounters that have occurred that we need to start addressing. So anyway, with that, I think I'll sign off right here. And I would like to hand off to a friend and somebody that I feel we work well together with. And actually, Heather and I serve together on the Human Rights Commission. So Heather Selecki, please take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. And I'm glad to be here today. I got involved with this issue about 10 years ago, back in the 10s. And I was the neighborhood association chair in Southeast Eugene at the time. I knew that homelessness was an issue here in the community. And I went and I talked to the government. I talked to Human Rights and Neighborhood Involvement to try to find out, you know, what can we do here? And I learned that the way that the city deals with homelessness is really on a complaint-driven model, which was how it was kind of handled at the time. Public Works and Parks and Rec, and you have all these different departments, and they weren't really talking to each other. They were all kind of saying, "Well, we're the city. We do streets and sewers and signage. We're not a human services agency." And then I talked to the county, and I said, "You know what? Going on, where are the shelters in our town? We don't have a public shelter. We have thousands of people on the street." And they said, "Well, you know, we're not really set up for that. We do land use and building code." And what I learned is, you know, they really weren't set up to deal with these cascading system collapses. And they didn't have any land or ability to pop anything up. And what they said was, "Go talk to the churches, because the churches are doing something in the community." So I did. I went to my neighborhood church that had an Egan Warming Center and was one of the first tiny house locations. And I said, "Well, you know, what's going on here?" And they said, "Yeah, this is a problem here at the churches too. We believe that it is our duty to help the poor, but our membership is dwindling. We just don't have as many people. And we've tried to have people, but it can be challenging without any wraparound support." So I went to the business community. Actually, when I met with Brittany back then, she was just new to the chamber, and we sat down and we talked about it. What are you experiencing? What are you hearing in the community? And we tried to go to the business meetings. We went to talk to them about our need for locations to put people and help with staffing. But it really, you know, it was hard for people to really wrap their mind around how to help. So then I talked to the nonprofits, and I actually went and started working for one at Whitebird to try to figure out what's going on here. And what I was finding is that 70% or more of the contracts were going to the nonprofits to manage some of the symptoms of the crisis. And at the time, there really wasn't a whole lot other than the mission. And community supported shelters had a 20-person rest stop. So what we had to do was we had to work to get new forms of shelter established. We had to do rest stops. We had to do overnight parking program expansion. We had to create all different new types of giving some people a place to go. But it was never enough. And you're right, what you heard Brittany and Randy say, the lack of coordination, it's a challenge because you have all of these people who are competing for finite resources to try to stand up services. And here in our community, back before 2020, we had very few disasters. So you didn't have a lot of agencies that were used to working together in collaborative ways. So it just kind of made things very complicated, and you have a lot of duplicated services and siloing, and it was really challenging. So I went to the emergency manager and I was like, "We the government doesn't have this, faith, business, nonprofit doesn't have this. This is a disaster. I've been trained as a community emergency response team. When are we going to call this the disaster that it is? And they're starting to work on it now, actually, because we need to scale up to protect the unsheltered. What we found during the pandemic and the fires is new people are getting unhoused all the time. In Oregon right now, they say there are 11,000 people who are probably going to be evicted this month. So we have all these new people entering into unsheltered realities, and we just don't have enough services. I look to this winter, we've got Egan Warming Center. It was supposed to be 1, maybe 2 years to help people who were experiencing inclement weather. This is our 13th year with Egan this year, and we have hundreds of beds, far shorter than we had prior to the pandemic. You have people who are clearly suffering. You have cahoots is being called, but you know, 60% of the cahoots calls are transport. If they don't have a place to take people, they can't be very effective. They have to help hide people in bushes, right? You know, you can't expect a crisis response for chronic issues related to housing, healthcare, lack of living wage jobs, the lack of preventative supports to prevent the crisis situations. If you don't prevent the crisis, then it ends up being just chronic. And that's what's happened. Our system has really suffered from it. And so we're right now at the emergency management level, we're standing up an all hazards multi-jurisdictional task force where we're going to start looking at this and try to figure out how we can at least manage for like the smoke and the various things that we expect from climate change. But even that won't be enough, because I eventually had to start looking at it from a human rights perspective, because we have services for some people, but there are some people who we don't have services for, right? And people who are low income, a lot of times they have barriers to housing, and it might be related to low credit scores or eviction records or prohibitive application fees. There's all kinds of reasons why not everybody has housing, and why people are even denied to housing based on their housing status. And Eugene, if you went and you said, I'm homeless, I need to rent this house, someone could say, oh, I don't rent to homeless people. And that's totally okay, because that's something that we allow in our law. Homelessness violates the right to housing, the right to life, including non-discrimination, health, water and sanitation, security of the person, and freedom from cruel, degrading, and inhuman treatment. We just have to go somewhere new from here. And where I think we need to go is more housing, more shelter solutions. And we need to realize that the unsheltered need community too. There's going to be people who are on waiting lists for a very long time. And right now, more than half of the people who are experiencing homelessness in our community have one or more disabling conditions. A third are experiencing homelessness lasting more than 12 months. We can't ignore this reality anymore. Our safety net is not catching people. If something happened to any of us here in this room, it would not catch us. It really is, it's just not there. So we need more humane, collaborative, and sustainable responses. And we are a strong community. We need to recognize our assets and build on those and set intentional paths to solutions that will be addressing multiple problems at one time. I'm really fortunate right now because I'm involved with standing up a new type of shelter model called Everyone Village. Out in West Eugene, we're building a safe shelter community with 24/7 staff support. We're going to have a combination of RVs and micro shelters and Conestoga huts. It's really a planned unit development with wraparound supports both for health and for work. We're partnering with Oregon Bottle Drop, and we're going to provide income opportunities for canners and gleaners. We're putting a mushroom farm out there so that we can grow our own food and have a way to help supplement our income while providing residents with opportunities for vocational and rehabilitational work. But we're not doing this alone. We're doing this with amazing support from the community. From the very beginning, Randy Gross has been out here in West Eugene talking to the people, really getting into the streets and learning what the problems are and how collectively we can solve them, because it can't be solved by any one of these individuals that I've talked to, any one of these organizations. It's only going to be with all of us together, universities and businesses. What we're going to try to do in West Eugene is create a mutual benefit model for the surrounding community. So we're not just going to come and put people in a warehouse situation in a parking lot. No, we're going to be working with the community. We're helping to reinvigorate the neighborhood association that's here in West Eugene. We're going to provide different kinds of products to the neighbors, and we're going to help with waste management. So there's just all kinds of ways that we feel like we can put our solution in the community and make it an asset to it. And we're going to convene, collaborate, and catalyze with all the business and community leaders. Brittany said earlier, you know, sitting at the table as equals. That's what we need to do right now. We are all equally impacted by this. This is our community, and we can take it back. Now is not the time to allow ourselves to become tolerant of the injustices that prevent people from choosing the terms and conditions with which they engage this world. We can do better. We can strive to preserve the dignity and honor of all of the people, regardless of their physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual condition. And I know that we're going to be able to do it together as a community.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org, or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.